Over here, which is put on by the Florida Folklife Program, as is this Folklife Area stage. And we're also very grateful to the National Endowment for the Arts for funding our presentations in part. Eileen Broutman is from Miami, and she's an extraordinary artist. By profession, she's an art teacher, but she, for the last couple decades, has been particularly working in the art form of Jewish marriage contracts, or ketubah, and she's going to tell you a little bit about the history of these and her involvement in making ketubah, and answer any questions you might have. So, Eileen?
Thank you, and good morning to everyone. Ketubah, what is that? Actually, about 20 years ago, I would have asked that question. I had never heard the word before, and I had already been married 21 years. And someone kindly told me, well, if you were married by a rabbi, you have a ketubah. And of course, I said, oh, that paper that's in the vault. Oh, yes, that's what it is. It's a Jewish marriage contract. And because it is undecorated, it was hidden away. But there has been a renaissance in the decorated ketubah, or Jewish wedding contract, over the past 20 or 30 years. And suddenly, I found my art form. So let's go back to the beginning. The first recorded marriage contract occurs in the book of Tobit, which was recorded at about the same time that the Bible was written, or shall I say recorded. And it indicates that a man and a woman sat with the bride's father, a scroll was written and to seal the marriage, and that they had food together, which of course has turned into a wedding banquet. And this indication predates Christianity and our Bible by hundreds and hundreds of years. It's amazing because women were given rights. What does it say in the contract? That the groom will take care of his wife as is befitting a Jewish husband. And that he will follow the laws of Moses. Most of us call them the Ten Commandments. And that he would be providing for her. They would live together. He would provide for her. And if he happened to die first, she could inherit. She would inherit from him. And if they were divorced, she would be provided for, especially if there were children and there was a need for that. Now, this sounds kind of, well, people do that all the time now, but we're talking about over 2,000 years ago, and at that time, as even now in many parts of the world, women simply don't or didn't have rights. The inheritance would very possibly go to the children or the firstborn son, and the wife could be left a pauper if she didn't have that offspring to take care of her. And so it was written. The bride's price, we don't do that anymore, and the dowry, which we don't do in many places either, was recorded. The amount that the bride brought to the marriage, she was entitled to have back if the marriage ended. And this gave her some financial stability and respect. She was no longer chattel, but she had her own possessions and she had rights to them. This protection came down through the years in the form of the ketubah, which is a formula, and it says what the rights of the bride are. It is a promise from the groom to the bride, but it is a binding deed that is not only written down, ketubah means that which is written, but it is witnessed by at least two witnesses. And just as any deed or contract would be, It is legally binding. Now, over the centuries, Judaism has moved in slightly different directions. There was the diaspora that moved the Hebrew people out of the land of Israel. And some of those people moved to Spain, the Iberian Peninsula, Spain and Portugal. And basically, they were Spanish-speaking. And then there was another group that moved through the Near East and through Europe. And the European Jews were called Ashkenazi. And the Spanish-speaking Jews are the Sephardim. In the Ashkenazi tradition, there were rabbis who added to the ketubah. They formalized the formula in it and added some additional protections to the woman. Polygamy was no longer allowed, and some other things that made it all there on the paper. You didn't have to make any fuss or bother. All you had to do is fill in the names and dates and sign it. And so that ketubah, like mine, I'll be glad to show it to you at the table, has no decoration on it. It is just the deed, the contract. But in the Spanish tradition, a very different thing happened. Different amounts of money were involved in the dowry and the bride's price. And so that was noted in the ketubah. And the bride's dowry was laid out for everyone to see at the time of the wedding. And so was the ketubah. It was put out like this. And of course, it was read during the wedding ceremony. Well, if you're going to see it, it needs to be decorated. It needs to be beautiful. And I guess some of the people were trying to keep up with the Joneses because it had to be a little more beautiful and elaborate and wonderful than the neighbors. And so it became very richly ornamented and very beautiful to look at. Now, as I said, I never even heard the word ketubah. And mine was in the vault. But I visited a friend and turned in her hallway to see a wall that was absolutely filled, an enormous, enormous piece of artwork, beautiful, very lavishly decorated, and all written in Hebrew. And I said, "What is that?" And she looked at me and said, "Of course, it's my ketubah." And so my education began.
Now, hasn't in recent years there been a renaissance in ketubah, and people like yourself that didn't even really know about the tradition have suddenly become more aware of it?
Absolutely. It turned out that in America at about that time, many people like me were becoming interested in the ketubah, learning about the fact that it could be and should be ornamented. Now, it's not written that it has to be ornamented, but I brought this along so I could give a good quote. Decorating any religious object fulfills the concept of hidur mitzvah, and that is the joyous... decorating anything that is... when a joyous commandment requires a physical object for its performance. And it comes from Genesis, where there's the line, "This is my God, and I shall beautify him." And that's the same reason that we have beautiful silver kiddush cups or wine cups and gorgeous tablecloths for the Sabbath and all of the other accoutrements of our religious ritual. And so here it was. This beautiful art form that people were just starting to learn about and practice. And fortunately, I saw a ketubah by a wonderful artist, Nancy Greenberg. I couldn't remember her name yesterday, who lived in Miami, who had a scribe write the wording, and she decorated it with the most luscious watercolor flowers, big, beautiful flowers. And I looked at that and said, I want to be able to do that. I want to be able to do it for Jewish brides and grooms. It's like carrying on our tradition, dor v'dor, from one generation to the next. And also it honors my ancestors. My life is basically based on art. And how was I going to connect that with my Judaic experience and my spirituality? And this was it. And I knew it right from the start. I already knew how to do English calligraphy because I had studied that with a teacher. And very fortunately, I found an Israeli scribe who was teaching Hebrew calligraphy at the Jewish Community Center and took lessons and learned how to do that. And then I went looking for a decorative style that would be me. My students had been working on Polish paper cuts. We even won a prize. One of the students did, not me. And I realized that paper cutting was something that I could do. This was something I could really relate to. And so I started studying it. The Chinese tradition, the Polish tradition, which is done in many different ways, and any other that I could find. And while I was researching it, I opened a book of Judaica, and there was a wonderful piece of artwork that hangs on the wall, and it has one word on it, Mizra. And it's an indication of the eastern wall, the direction in which to pray. And the whole decoration was a paper cut. Ah, there's a connection. And so when I was finally able to find books on Ketubot, historical ones and worldwide, I searched for a paper cut. And sure enough, there they were, especially in some very beautiful pieces from Italy. And I have one in a book that I have with me. And so I put it all together. But I waited until I had a ketubah that would be particularly meaningful for me to write. And so I waited until my eldest son, Michael, our eldest son, my husband's here, got married and made my very first ketubah for him and his bride. And since then, I've made approximately one each year. And that's only because I work full-time being an art teacher. And it's very time-consuming, but it's a labor of love.
Could you talk a little bit about some of the symbolism that we might see in your ketubah?
Certainly. Judaic symbolism is repeated in just about every ritual object, and I allow the bride and the groom to make choices about what they would like added to their ketubah. Very often, a Star of David is used, as I believe there is in this one. Isn't there? That's okay. I think we have it now. And now that I look at it, there's no Star of David there. This one is actually based on a ketubah from Gibraltar, which is done in an oval format, tied with a beautiful ribbon at the bottom. And at the top is a crown. The crown represents both the bride and the groom on their wedding day. They are considered royalty for the day. And it represents the Torah, which is English is the Bible or the Old Testament. There are a pair of birds up there, and quite frankly, they represent me or the bride and the groom. I'm a bird watcher. I sneak a bird into just about everything I do. It is against our most orthodox tradition to show people, to put the human form in our artwork. And so the bride and the groom are there as lovebirds. The lions are the lions of Judah. In ancient times, the countries of Israel and Judea were separate and then came together to make the land of Israel. But Judea was a desert, a mountainous desert, and lions roamed there. And so the lion was the symbol for Judea or Judah. And in the temple, the lions are often seen flanking the Ten Commandments, protecting the law. In this case, they are on top of a pair of columns. In the temple, there were a series of columns. The very first two were so important that they had names One of them is Boaz, and I've forgotten the other. And so this, the columns represent the temple in Jerusalem. In this case, we also have the bride and the groom's Hebrew names on the ribbon. And because the Gibraltar Ketubah has initials on it, their initials are up at the top. Their names are Seth and Linda Lubin. Then we have an Israeli flag. These are symbols that they asked for. And on this side, it says mazel, which means good luck. Over there, we have the scales of justice because the groom is an attorney. And on this side, there's a pen and ink and paper because the bride is a writer, a journalist, I guess is the best word, okay? There are grapes for the wine. And I don't think we ever figured out what that was yesterday. Yes, there's flowers on the other side for the festivals. And in the middle, they asked for a tree of life, and I just put a very, very faint one right down the middle, or up through the middle is another way of putting it. And if you've been over to Miriam and Annette's table and have seen the pomegranate, you'll understand why there are pomegranate flowers up at the top. The pomegranate is a fruit filled with seeds. In the Jewish faith, there are 613 commandments, which is a lot, and the pomegranate seeds stand for or represent the 613 commandments, but they also stand for fruitfulness, an important wish for the bride and groom.
Well, we've got a few more minutes, but I was wondering if you would tell us about what people do with the ketubah during their marriage, and what if a marriage dissolves?
Well, at the beginning, I've been fortunate to be part of the signing of many ketubah, the ones that I've written. A very small ceremony happens before the actual wedding in which the rabbi very often asks the ketubah artist to complete the ketubah because it is made, if it is made specifically for the bride and groom, as mine often are. And then it is witnessed, does not have to be signed by either the bride or the groom, but it may be. In modern times, we each have to have our say, right? So we do that. And then it's taken to the chuppah, the wedding canopy, and the rabbi would read it there. Sometimes it's in English. It can be in any language. So it could be read in a language that everybody would understand, or he might read the Hebrew. And then it would be given to the groom, who gives it to the bride, at which point she would hand it to her mother so they can finish the ceremony. Afterwards, if it is especially a beautiful one, it would be framed and hung in their home, very often in their bedroom, but sometimes they're very elaborate and become decorations in a living room or a hallway or some other place. And then, if unfortunately a marriage dissolves, the ketubah is supposed to be destroyed. But again, in modern times, there are a lot of options. For instance, this is one of my failures. Out of the many ketubot I've written, and I've written at least 15, probably more than 20, two couples have divorced.
Those aren't bad odds.
I know they're very good odds. Not only that, except for the very most recent marriages, there are children all over the place. Oh, that's really nice. In any case, I had borrowed this ketubah from the bride just around the time that they were getting divorced, and I just never gave it back. And somebody, I guess she, noticed that and saw me, sometime this past year, and asked me if I still had it. And I said, yes, do you need it for the get, which is the Jewish divorce. I knew that they had already gotten that. And she said, oh, no, we don't. You can keep it. So that's why It's not destroyed, which pleased me, and I can use it as a sample.
Right. That's wonderful to have one, because you always give them away, so you must not have
samples. I don't have any of my artwork.
Right. Not that we wish for the marriage to be dissolved, right, but it serves a purpose for you.
Right.
Well, we're running out of time, but please, I invite you to go over to the Folk Arts tent and talk more with Eileen about the ketubah, and I know there'll be many questions you might want to ask her. Thank you very much.
Thank you.